You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello. Hi. I just want to take a moment in my soothing voice. I can't even do it. To give a shout out to the In Soccer We Trust YouTube family. Your like and subscribes keep us going, as does our special guest for today's show, U.S. Men's National Team center back Eric Palmer Brown. So get your questions ready for him. We have a lot to talk about. Yes.
So what is up, everyone? And welcome to Bruce Arena's favorite podcast, In Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside not only two of my longtime teammates, but also my longtime friends. I'm getting sappy here. Charlie Davies and Heath Pierce. And because this is how we roll, we have yet another amazing guest joining us this week on the show. It's U.S. Men's National Team center back Eric Palmer Brown, whose stock just shot straight up, not only because of Miles Robinson tearing his Achilles, meaning there's a starting spot open the U.S. Men's National Team back line, but also because he just got named as his club in France's Troyes Player of the Month, which is significant because this was the biggest month of their season as they held off being relegated, which really speaks to how well he played. But first, Chuck, coming to you, how excited are you to have Eric on the show?
I'm pumped. I haven't heard him talk about his story and his career path. And he's one of the few Americans who are kind of under the radar, but playing in Europe in a really difficult league, a tough league. So I'm excited to hear about his ups and downs and where he thinks he is within his potential.
All right. And Heath, what are you saying? I mean, we got another defender.
Show. Jimmy, that's what I was going to say. I'm just interested to see how Charlie tries to find anything in common with Eric, knowing that, you know, we've got a defender on the show and he's going about life story because he's got nothing else to talk about, you know, the tactics or, you know, Charlie wants to get into the goals and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I'm always come back to the number nine. You know that.
Yeah. No, it'll be a fun conversation, man. It's, you know, we talk about timing a lot in the national team and you can't really plan timing. And the opportunities that come, and for him, I'm interested to get into just sort of the fact that he's now emerged at a time that we actually were talking about it being too late for anybody to sort of step out and make an impact. But now you've got an injury there. His performances have been great at club level. He's played well with the national team. And now you just start a whole nother conversation about what this could potentially be for him. So I'm excited to talk about it.
All right. Well, let's bring him on the show. We got a tail of the tape standing 6'1" tall, 194 pounds of muscle, growing up in Lee's Summit, Missouri. When at the age of 16, he signed a pro contract with Sporting Kansas City before making a loan move to Porto in 2016, then signing with Manchester City, where he's been loaned out to teams in Belgium, Holland, Austria, and now France to gain that much needed experience, which is necessary for any defender to grow and evolve. And he's done so well, he's on the cusp of making the 2022 World Cup team for the U.S. men's national team. It's 25-year-old Eric Palmer Brown! What's up, Eric? How are you doing,
How's
my friend?
Going?
Long time no see.
Long time. It's been a minute. I feel bad. My background's not as cool as your guys'. Like, I just got, you know how it is living in Europe. I got nothing hanging up in these apartments.
Yeah, you know, because they're going to hit you with that repainting fee if you paint those walls that color. You know?
Exactly. You leave everything.
So Eric, let's get into your backstory a little bit, because I don't know if people knew that you grew up in Kansas City or near Kansas City, played for Sporting Kansas City, and then only after 20 games of playing with SKC, you made the decision to go play in Europe. And we have obviously a big conversation about that, about our younger players making that jump. What inspired you to do it?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing for me is I always dreamed of playing in Europe. I think I grew up watching TV, like we're watching Premier League games, waking up early, catching the Chelsea games. My favorite player was Didier Drogba growing up. So like nice. I was just
number nine,
big Chelsea fan. he is a number nine. And I just always dreamed of playing in Europe because of that. I think England was always my goal. But then as I grew up and got more acquainted with the other leagues and seeing how big football or soccer is in Europe, like that was the driving force of getting overseas and just trying to reach that next level.
Eric, you know, when you first started your career, you were hyped as a young player, and now you're 25. And it doesn't fit. Well, you still got plenty of time, obviously. You know, if this was Charlie, I'd be like, you know, a little bit on the old end for a striker. You got to start scoring some goals, but you're a defender, so you got some legs left in you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't fit the mold of what's sexy right now in the national team, right? Which is overly young. We want all about the future. But now you found yourself in a really good position at the club level, really good position with the national team. What has it been like for you over these last sort of couple of years, trying to find your the right club for you, trying to get sort of the attention of the national team? And now you find yourself on the cusp of doing something that I'm sure you probably dreamed of your whole life. I mean, what's that journey been like for you up to this point?
Yeah, it's been crazy, because I would say a lot of the driving force of also moving overseas, to Jimmy's last question, was like what the national team at the time was, Jurgen Klinsmann. And he was saying, I want all my talent kind of like overseas, like saying that stuff. So that was another like driving force of getting me to Europe and hopefully getting me a look to be in the national team. So just being on this journey, like being on loan from team to team, it's really difficult. Moving from country to country, you kind of like, you got to learn the language, you got to learn like the culture, you got to learn the new style, you got to move like apartments, find like, I every time I move, I'm like in a hotel for a month and just like not settled at all. And it's always really difficult for me to just like get settled. Like I always just want to like be in my own space, like be able to have a car to get around the town and stuff like that. So it's been kind of like a crazy up and down ride, where like at the beginning, like I always find it hard to find my feet and get those matches, get those games and get acclimated. But I kind of adjust and adapt over time. So I would say that's been the hardest part of the journey. But like the most rewarding part has been also that side of it, like being able to see new cultures, being able to get to learn new languages and, well, kind of like pick up some new languages. Not, I wouldn't say learn, but pick up some new languages and, you know, get this experience, because I didn't go to I signed with Manchester City, but I was on loan and I didn't go to like the sexiest club right away. Like just kind of like was on loan in Kortrijk. And I think I got like 9 games there in the playoffs, like the second playoff. And then after that, I went to Holland and I think played 19 games in NAC Breda. And that was towards the end of the season. We got relegated. And then finally I got like a 2-year loan stretch at Austria Vienna. And I mean, we weren't a Champions League team like Salzburg, who's always in the Champions League or first place. We were kind of like mid-table, so we were fighting. And it was just kind of one of those loan moves that really solidified me. Like as a defender, I was working with Julian Lescott, like from Man City's loan team. And I think that really helped me. We would sit down, watch video, and he kind of broke it down in his eyes. And I think that really helped me grow a lot as a defender. And those 2 years also of being stable at a club and not having to like pick up and move and just know where I'm going back to a certain place, just really helped me just be confident and just be settled for once, I feel like. So well, that was kind of,
don't get rattled with Heath telling you you're on the older side. You just turned, 25. He makes it seem
no,
like,
no, I said the sexy thing right now is like, you know, Josh Wolf's son makes his debut for Austin. Not, he's 17. People go, you know, we go crazy, but I'm saying not with the national team, but when Walker Zimmerman came back in, people were talking about like, wow, it's kind of just a weird emergence because you have these 2 years where Greg was sort of grooming his guys and you were on the outside looking in. Obviously a player you've been capped at, your first cap was what, 2018, right? Wasn't it around so a while ago. Yeah. There's a gap there, so that's what I'm saying, Charlie. Yeah. Don't come at me, bro. I punch back. This is a defender show. This is a defender show.
But you touched on it in terms of getting that consistency. I know what Liga is like. It's a crazy league, athletic, and I feel like it's underrated. I still don't think it gets enough credit considering what PSG is. But talk to me about your growth this season, because where do you go from here? You're playing in a very competitive league. You're a standout. You're getting 90 minutes consistently, and you're doing a damn good job. So how have you kind of built off of what you've been able to do so far, and what's next?
Yeah, I mean, what's next is, I think, kind of a difficult question, because, like, obviously you want the next steps to be always going up. And I think for me right now, like you said, Ligue 1 is just such a difficult league. You know, week in, week out, you're playing good competition, like young, athletic forwards, defenders all over the place. I think the French team's going to be set for like, I don't even know how long to come. It's unbelievable how like you'll see like a 19-year-old start like center back starting at Lyon, and it's just like, this is crazy. But it's, for me, getting those consistent minutes and like being here in Troyes, I think is probably the best option for me to stay and with the same coach, get those minutes, still playing in Ligue 1. I'm not really looking for a move or anything at this moment. Like, I just want to be in the best position possible for me to get into that national team and be playing games.
Now, Eric, I'm going to jump in really quick and say what I find as a silver lining for you to, I guess, with all these loan moves, going to different clubs every single season or just having a 2-year stint somewhere, is I feel like you got to quickly adapt to tactics, to personalities within the locker room, to a whole bunch of different things. And I actually think that sets up really well when you join a national team who you're not around a lot. You might know the guys and you might've played some youth national team, but you're still not around them on a regular basis. And I really feel like that could position you really well to adapt to different asks that Greg Berhalter and the coaching staff or some of your teammates might be asking you to do. Now, there's a lot I want to ask you about, but I kind of want to get here with regard to Miles Robinson, that news breaks. Obviously he's probably a friend of yours. But when he tears his Achilles, I think it brings everything into focus. I feel like, I don't know, you can answer us or answer this as to how you reacted. But for me, if I were you or any of the other center, I'd be like, oh, shit, this got real. Like, this is a real possibility now for me to be heavily influential in the team. What were your thoughts on that? And you've already talked about the adaptability, but I think that really suits you well for the men's national team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first, for me, like you said, I'm a friend of Miles. And like, I woke up in the morning kind of like with the news on my phone, like my friends messaging me, like, I think my friends said that like before anything, like, oh, this is a real chance for you. And I was just like, that's not really what I was worried about at the time. Cause right. I felt so bad for Miles. Like, I had to reach out to him, and like, you guys know how it was for Miles. He was killing it. He was doing well with the national team. He just earned his spot from the Gold Cup in the summer and stuff like that. And he killed it in qualifying for us. So first off, just reached out to him. But it's like you said, like, injuries happen, and those are the times that now, yeah, like, there is an opportunity there, and one of us has to go grab it. One of us has to take that opportunity, and that's the thing. It's not going to just be given to us. This is – we're going to the World Cup. We got a couple games. I think we only have this summer camp coming up, and then September before going to the World Cup. So Greg's got some decisions to make, and I think it's going to be a tough one, but at the end of the day, like, it's up for grabs, like you said, and that's kind of the mentality. It is,
you'll be in there,
just got to go for it.
You're gonna be in there.
You're gonna make his life difficult. Yeah. We already know, Eric.
Eric,
let me ask you this. You know, shifting a little bit away with your loan moves and the career that you've been on, trajectory you've been on, just talk a little bit about life in some of these smaller towns, right? I think when you're in the U.S. it's very easy, you know, to talk about, like, you know, people go, I don't want to go to Columbus, or, you know, obviously KC is an unbelievable city. But if you're somebody who's in Europe, you go, I want to go to New York. I want to go to LA. I want to go to Miami. Talk about what it's like playing for a team where you're in a small town, kind of your social life, the difficulties of that, the fact that, like, you're famous the moment you get there because you're in a small town. Kind of illuminate sort of that world a little bit, just so for people that don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys can hear it in the background, but I just went like yesterday to buy an like portable air conditioning unit. Cause like in Europe, in these smaller cities, you know, like when it gets hot out, and like as an American, I'm just used to like in Kansas City, humid summers, like always having air conditioning. Oh my gosh, I was dying the other day. I just woke up sweating. So I had to go buy, but like, it's just different. Those little things that you like are like accustomed to, kind of thing. It's just not the same. Like, obviously language barrier is tough. Like when I moved to France, I didn't know any French. And I'm still learning.
Is most of your team in France, domestic players? Cause you know, in some of the bigger clubs, you obviously English is more prevalent cause you have more international players, but I'm assuming it's mostly French.
It's mostly French, but I would say a majority of them kind of can like speak English and stuff like that. And like when I came, they spoke a little bit, but when you move like to these clubs too in Europe, what I'll say is like in America, when I was 16 and kind of like signed with Sport in Kansas City, like they really accepted me into the club like right away. Like here in Europe, you have to fight for that, right? Like they don't just let you come in, take their job. Like the captain here was the center back, and I don't think he spoke a word to me until like mid-season, until like his job was kind of on the line. So it was just kind of like, it's one of those things when you move to like a smaller city, like, yeah, it's smaller. You kind of become like, people notice you out in the streets and stuff like that. And it's nice because it's really easy to get around. It's really small, but like, it's definitely a different lifestyle where they're just used to like being in these like smaller areas and no air conditioning, you know, no like ice for your drinks and stuff like that. I just like notice the little things for some reason, but it's been good. Like Paris is like 2 hours away, so I can take a train up to Paris, which is really nice. And I've had some friends over for a little bit, but it is different. I like to chill. I sit at home and I'll game with my friends or just watch soccer or anything that's on that's like a sports. So
I'm reminiscing with you.
Hey, I know you both went out and ordered a Coke before and it came and it was about 3 ounces and you're like, can I get another, please?
Oh man.
Yes, exactly. It's insane.
The tiny towns in France. I mean,
great
food, great little restaurants, hole in the walls, and you get used to like your one or two restaurants.
Exactly. I got two.
Same. I want to talk about some of the players that you have to face. You finally go to Parc des Princes and you play Paris Saint-Germain. You see Mbappe up close. You actually took him down for a penalty. You see Messi up close. What's it like to defend some of these players? I'm guessing this is your first time having to defend an Mbappe and a Messi and some of these players. Who else has impressed you throughout the league, and what have you noticed about these type of attackers when you're defending them?
Yeah, man. So actually in my like 2018 stint with the national team, we played France before they went to the World Cup. So I got on the field for like the last 25, 30 minutes and Mbappe was in then, but we were just defending that whole time. So there was parts of this game where we kind of had possession. They were kind of like on vacation, you know, like they've already clinched the league. They're out of Champions League. They were out of the cup. So this was for them, I think, kind of like staying fit and just like, because you could tell there was like a little laziness in the game, but at the same time, it was still a game for us. And, you know, like, when the French players are playing against Paris Saint-Germain, when everyone's playing against these big clubs, like it's like, oh, we got to step it up a level. So playing these guys was surreal. You know, you see them, you're like watching them. See, my friends are texting me before the game, like, oh, get his jersey. I hope you don't get like nutmegged or anything. Like, I hope you get like, they didn't say, I hope you don't get nut. They were hoping that I got nutmegged or something. I got like clipped. They're like, they would send me the Jerome Boateng clip and be like,
this is mental warfare right here.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's just, it's one of those moments that you just pinch yourself. Cause like after the game, like getting the draw, getting the result, like it was just so exciting, but there's so many good like attacking players in this league. I mean, going up against Ben Yedder, like his movement was like it was one of those things. You're just like, dude, stop moving around. Like you don't have this all the time with forwards to making your life like really difficult, but it's, when you're going up against those players, you can realize like, okay, that's why they're at the top. So
now, Eric, you ended it this season, but there was part of your adventure that you were supposed to go to Venezia in Serie A, and you all also had a link to Serie A earlier when you were a younger player. Juventus had come into Sporting Kansas City and said they'd pay $1 million transfer fee for you right away. Sporting, actually, surprisingly, in my humble opinion, decided to turn that down, but held on to you for a little bit longer. And then you left for free, which is hilarious. But we can talk about that later. But you had a chance to go back to Serie A with Venezia. But Busio's there. Tanner Tessman is there. That would have been a good experience as well. Obviously, one of the top five leagues in Europe. But you ended up at 12. Tell us a little bit about what happened with Venezia.
Yeah, no. So after the season finished, like in the summer, I went back to pack up my apartment in Austria, got on the train, headed to Venice. Did my medical, did everything, was like getting ready to sign the contract. And before like we went to sign the contract, we were out to have a bite to eat and we get a call and they're like, like Eric's got something wrong with his heart. Like we can't sign him. And like, wow. This was the summer where like Christian Eriksen went down. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was super serious. And I was like shook. I was like, what do you mean? Like, I feel fine. Like I was just super excited to like sign in Venice. There was a couple other Americans there. Like I knew Busio was coming at the time. So it was just kind of one of those things that like, okay, like, can we go get this checked out? Like, and after like sign the contract, and they're like, no, if something like this pops up, we can't sign him for a whole year or something like that. And wow. I was just like shook. I was like, no way. Like it all just fell through like that. So like went back to Manchester, did some testing and everything was fine, which thank God. But at the end of the day, did all that testing, and then the transfer window was getting ready to close and not many options were popping up. So City was like, well, we got this team in France, like we'll loan you there. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, well, it wasn't like, all right, cool. Like I was kind of like, I was like, okay, you're pawning me off, that kind of thing. But they were like, no, they really are looking for a center back. And, you know, I get there and things didn't turn out kind of like they said. It was just, the coach was like, we didn't want you guys. Like there was a couple mm-hmm. other City players that went there. He's like, we didn't want you guys. Like we wanted different players. We wanted French guys, like this and that, which was like, it's good that the coach was honest, because usually sometimes the coach will like drag you along like, oh no, like you're doing this thing. Like straight away, he was just like, no, like we didn't want you there. And so coming to midseason, I was kind of like, all right, I got to get out of here. Like I'm not playing any games. And then the coach kind of got sacked, and then new coach came in and was like, I want you to stay, and kind of just stake my claim. It's been in the team ever since.
That's what's up.
Just wow. Like that. New yeah. coach. That's all it takes.
That's it. Yeah, but literally coaches make careers. Coaches yeah. make careers, dude.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the relegation battle, because I was relegated from the Bundesliga, and it's the favorite time of year, final 3-4 weeks of the season. Everybody's watching, you know, the most of the title races are somewhat sorted out in Europe, but then you have these relegation battles, and they're fun to watch, but they're not fun to experience. I mean, what's And we're obsessed with this in the US of pro rel. Everybody wants to see that because you cut your teeth and you learn all these things, which you do. But talk about the stress of going through that week in and week out, sort of the vibe that's in the locker room, you know, I got trauma from it still, of just like going through through that, like on the training pitch, in the locker room, in the town. I mean, what's your experience? What was it like?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like you're looking at other teams, you're like to lose games. You're like if you lose a game, like we had a game at 3:30, which is usually like the first game, or 1:30 is usually the first game, and we lost. And then like we're looking for after our game, like for other teams to lose, like you're rooting for other teams to lose. It's just,
it's like youth soccer. It's crazy. Like looking at the tournament board, you know,
bro, it's so crazy. Cause like, then you're looking like, okay, we got our next couple games. We're like, we had like, it went, what'd it go? Nice, Lille, PSG. And we're like, okay, like we need to get points before these games. And like, we didn't get points before those games. We dropped points. So we're like, dude, now we're like coming up against like our toughest stretch. Like, okay, we can hopefully get some points against Lille, like at home. And then we got Lens after PSG that we need to get points from too. Cause like, I think they were chalking up Nice and PSG is kind of like a loss. So it was just like searching for points, and like in the locker room, like, our locker room vibe was kind of like good, but like in Bredo before, we were pointing fingers. Like the fans were like out to like get us. Like they like hung up a sign, like, if you don't play with pride, we'll take your kneecaps. Like it's just one of those things where like the fans are dying for it, you know? And it's a crazy situation to be in. But like now that like we're out of it, the stress is just like it's relieving. Like, cause at practice, we get to like have a little more fun. Like we have one more game left and like we know we're not getting relegated. So it's nice to play stress-free going into last weekend. That's for sure.
I mean, Charlie, that sounds like Revolution fans with signs with the caps. Like, can we ever win an MLS Cup? We've lost four of these.
Oh, don't do that to them.
I had to put it in there. APB knows.
That the win versus Leo was huge, the 3-0 win. But I'm looking at next season, like you said. You're staying in a place that you feel comfortable with. You know what you're getting from your coach, from your teammates. It seems like the perfect place for you to continue to build. How do you look at next year? How do you keep your club from being in this similar position? Or do you already know, man, it's going to be a fight we're going to finish around the 17, 16, 15, 14 range again? Or do you think you can add some quality to kind of move up the table?
Yeah, I think we can add some quality. I definitely do. I think our team in general is a solid team. I think we've struggled. Like, we've been pretty good defensively, and like, we can find a goal per game. We need to be more like, when we get that goal, like, still be on the offensive. I think we kind of like sit back and take a lot. You know, against Lons, we were up 1-0, and once they got that, like, once we got that goal, we kind of like, we didn't threaten them again. So to not have that pressure on them, not to put the pressure on them, I think that's something that we could definitely get better at as a team, and hopefully move up the table, because next season in Ligue 1, there are four teams just get straight relegated because they're moving to 18 teams the next season. So we don't want to be in the same spot that we're in, because we will be in that relegation battle again. So we have to do something to make our team better, to be better as individuals, to help our team push those top 10 spots. Yeah, that's for sure.
Now, Eric, I've got a question about your parent club, Manchester City. I mean, at some point, you know, you're in the system, then they go out and sign Ruben Dias, you know, John Stones fights his way back into it. Laporte starting to play more. What kind of conversations do you have with them? We've seen it with Matt Miazga and Chelsea. I mean, you guys aren't isolated. This happens to a lot of players, but do you feel like you're part of their plans, or do you just feel like you're part of the family? They're going to help you out the best that they can. I'm also friends with Julian Lescott. That's my flex of the day. Yeah. And I know he's got a very pivotal role in making sure, I think he's still got the same job, right? Where he's helping out all the players out on loan to make sure that the best versions of themselves. Did he leave?
Yeah, he's with the under 21s England now.
Got Jimmy's not that close.
Well, clearly not as close as I am.
Hey, you guys need to have a check-in.
I got to check in, man. I got to get that mini flex. But with regard to that relationship with your parent club, I'm actually very curious. As you get, now you're 25, I mean, at what point were they, are there like an age, hey, we're going to bring you back in 2 years or whatever it is. I'm sure all our listeners are curious as well.
No, yeah. For me, it felt like just part of the family, in all honesty. I think when I got there, I didn't have a work visa to play in England. Like, the only way to get a work visa was, at the time before Brexit happened, was you have to play 75% of your full men's national team game for that like calendar year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because at that time, when I signed with City, I was just coming up from the U20s, and they were just, I think, banking on that to get either that exceptional young talent rule or the 75% of the full men's team national games. And when that didn't happen and then Brexit happened, things were like just moving about. Mm-hmm. So and then they signed, like you said, Ruben Dias, John Stones came back. I think it was more kind of like, all right, we're going to help you in any way we can. And so that's just kind of how it's been. Relationship wise, they've always been good with like the communication. They're always checking in on you. That, you know, they have a sports psychologist, they have a nutritionist, they have all these guys checking in on you. You're always in a text message conversation, and they're really good people. But as for the fact of like being brought in, I didn't see like a clear pathway, honestly.
Did you train with that group? Did you ever train?
No, it was usually just the lone guys. We would get in, and then like if they needed a lone guy or two, like for training or something like that. But it was usually like we would have like a pretty big group of lone guys, and we'd be doing like fitness or training, and either Julian or one of the like under 23s coaches would run the training.
Can we get Pep Guardiola's phone number from you? Can we like text him? Like, how does
I only met him once. I met him once. We only spoke about golf, and that was it.
Interesting.
That's a interesting topic of conversation. Hey, we got a couple fan questions from people that are watching this show right now. One of them's from Greg Neal, who says, what do your teammates think of the U.S.'s chances in the World Cup, your French teammates?
Yeah, well, so when they saw the draw, I think they were like, wow, U.S. has an easy draw.
No respect for England, and I love it.
They were like, they have an easy draw. So I think most of the guys thought like they have a better draw because we have a Canadian in our locker room as well. And they saw his draw, and they were like, ooh, that's tough. So I don't know. Like with the French guys, like I have a teammate that used to be on the French national team, and he said something to me like when I started playing games and I was doing well. He said something that kind of like, it just ticked me off. He said like, you're doing good. And I was like, what do you mean? he's like really good. Like, you're impressing like the French fans, the French people. Like, they don't think Americans can play soccer, like football. And I was just like, it was just crazy to me that they still have that perception, you know, like that Americans can't play. I'm like, we got Americans all over Europe showing up. And it was just one of those things where it's like, okay, whatever. Like, I just got to keep grinding here in France. Like, it's going to be a grind. So I think that was pretty early on. It was like 3 or 4 games in for me. So I kind of understood it, but like at the same time, it was just like, man, this, you're always going to have to prove yourself as an American.
Yeah, you're pretty good. Always. Pretty good for an American. All things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. Yeah, that's how it feels.
Chuck, you got any more fun questions for Eric Palmer Brown?
I do.
We set him free.
U.S. Women's National Team. You come in as a substitute and as Tekka. What was that experience to you? What was that? Did you feel like it was? Because I in talking to a lot of players, they were like, man, everyone thought this was going to be crazy, but it was a lot less low key than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it was, I think it was different just because, like, obviously the stadium wasn't at full capacity. So it wasn't as like, when you walk in there and you see it, like, it sits, like, it's huge. It's massive. It's like 110,000. You're like, I was like huffing because like the altitude, man, that altitude is crazy. When you were walking through the hallways, it is no joke. And then Greg asked me the day before, he was like, have you ever played right back before? And I was like, no. And then to go out there and play right back, I was like, oh man, because you know those right backs, those outside backs, they just get up and down. I was like, oh man. And that,
I can't believe you're honest, by the way. And I would have just been like, yeah. Have you ever played a game before? Yes.
Yeah, I started last week. I was right back last week.
I straight up said, no, I've never played. But and then he was like, well, we think your qualities could be good there. And so I was just like, yeah, no problem. And I didn't think, even then, I was like, at the time, Reggie was just sick, you know, so I didn't think, I was like, oh, okay, he's just asking to like be cautious. But it was still like that, you know, playing against Mexico is like the best thing. Like, you just want to beat Mexico at all costs. So like being in the Azteca, being there in a crucial qualifying game and to be in that moment was just surreal.
Now, Eric, you also played some defensive mid, and I know that you have the capabilities of playing that position. Have you had any chances of playing that in any of the clubs you've gone on loan with, or because I think that's a hidden versatility for you that maybe a lot of fans don't know, that you can go and hold your own at the defensive mid standpoint.
He gave it up. He sent her back to life.
Man, when you play as a so the only time I played as a defensive mid was in the U20 qualifying. And when you have Tyler Adams playing at 10, running in front of you, and Eric Williamson in front, man, it was just, it made it so easy. Tyler just would just run around. He'd do all the running for me. I was pretty much like back in the days, you call him stopper sweeper. I was like a stopper. Like, I didn't have to do much. So like Tyler and men made me look good. Like, I do think I can play there, and it is a fun position, but I think my main position is center back for sure.
Yeah, and I think
it's a good marketing tool, though. It's a good marketing tool because it means you're not going to see, like, you can play, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what sell it off as that. I can play. Yeah.
That's working for James Sands. You know, he's got a little, I guess he's got some experience at defensive mid, but, you know, he's played some center back as well. All right. Last question before we let you go. And Eric, we really appreciate your time and really excited for everything you've accomplished this particular season with Troyes in particular. Excited for these upcoming games in June. We fully expect you to be on the roster, which should be announced here very, very soon. Now, this is also not from us. We do it as a show, but from Joel Jimenez. Hopefully I said that correct. Best jersey swap. Who is your best jersey swap throughout your career?
I'm not a huge jersey swapper. I would say my best one was with the French national team back when we did it in 2018 was Samuel Umtiti. But like for me, it's nice. Just always like I try to get my boys. So like my American guys, if I get to play against them, like this year I got Tim Weahs, I got Giacchini's when we played against them. So those are the jerseys I go for. Like my friends, my teammates that I've been on teams with before, because I think those mean more to me.
Hey, you're going
to
regret that.
You better start collecting next year.
Someday it'll all be done. You won't even be talking to those guys anymore. You'll be why did I do this? You know, I could have got that Mbappe.
Wait, I'll tell you, you're going to have a future family, your kids.
They won't believe it.
Next year.
You gotta go. Yeah,
PSG,
you gotta go get them all.
Lyon, take it all.
Get Dimitri Payet. Well, go get Mbappe.
I got a Kun Aguero here, and I got a Sasha Kljestan in a box. Which one do you think is up on the wall?
Why you gotta do that to Sasha?
Hey, bro? I love Sasha. I just saw him. But Kun Aguero's going on the wall. Sasha's in the box.
That makes absolutely crushing Sasha.
Kljestan just took a stray, by the way.
He scored a penalty yesterday. I love the guy. He's not making it on the wall.
Don't try and make it nice now. You just trashed him.
Well, Charlie, you have one of your friends have signed your jerseys, right? Was it Josie or?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to get a personal
message from your friend.
All right. But like after the like PSG game and stuff, like all my teammates were like sprinting, you know, like to get the other team's jerseys and stuff.
You don't have to do that.
Cash. Slide but your yeah. cash. They're this changing is, their own shirts at halftime. There's a big old pile. You can make up whatever story you want later on. You'd be like, come up to me. I was like, I can't trade this. And he gave it to me. Yeah. Like, keep it.
No, my recommendation for you, because I can see like you want it to mean something. You don't want it to be like the pull it out of the pile. Whoever you're playing against, who you're competing against, be like, hey, respect, like.
After the game, you swap it. I was going to ask Mbappe, but I gave him a penalty. So I was like, nah, I can't ask him.
Unbelievable. Well, Eric Palmer Brown, everybody, thank you so much for coming on, big man. Great to see your face. Best of luck in June and obviously in the upcoming season for both club and country. We're really excited to have you on the show. Hopefully we'll have you back on very, very soon. Eric Palmer Brown, give him some love. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate you. All right, everybody, we're going to take our first and only break of the show. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what we heard from Eric, of course, give some insights on what we thought based on his answers, and get into the Malik Tillman situation as he pledges his allegiance to the U.S. men's national team after leaving the German national team. That is big news. Don't go anywhere.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBSSports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBSSports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
Welcome back to In Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Hollywood Heath Pierce and Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies. We just had Eric Palmer Brown on the show. Every week, we're always delivering a special, special guest. Make sure you hit like and subscribe. If you're watching on the YouTubes, hit the subscribe button on any of your podcast platforms of choice and leave us a 5-star review if you're up for it. It'd be really nice. We'd really appreciate it. Helps us move up the algorithm or all that good stuff so we can continue to build out this amazing community leading up to and during the 2022 World Cup and beyond. Obviously, we're hosting 2026. That's going to be a big World Cup as well. Charlie, I'm going to come to you first. Actually, I'm just kidding. Let's go to the defender first. Hollywood Heath Pierce. Yeah. We just talked to a defender, Eric Palmer Brown. What were your takeaways from that interview? I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, the fact that he's kept such a positive attitude, and you could hear the things he's had to go through. It seems, look, we're all in a very privileged position to have the jobs that we have when we're playing. But when you're going through it, you don't always see it as that, right? He's getting loaned out club to club, moving apartments, moving his stuff, kind of unsettling. And that's a lot to go through in terms of the mental stress. you know, feeling like time is passing you by. Your career is a precious amount of time. But for him to have the attitude that he has and then find the form that he's found now, and now find himself literally in a perfect position to be able to potentially go to a World Cup is an unbelievable thing. And his attitude has been fantastic.
I loved his comment, Charlie, about not being honest with Greg and saying he never played right back. And I had heard that he...
Well, I would have lied through my teeth.
Of course. And you got to do whatever you got to do to get on the field. But that was fantastic. And he was so candid. And sometimes when you're a player like him, where you're on the cusp, right, of maybe making the team, you're not a lock. I wouldn't say he's a lock at the moment, but he's close, especially with Miles going down. I loved his transparency. I thought it was awesome.
I would say he's a lock right now, as long as he continues to play next year.
Of course.
Year.
I agree.
He's a lock. Just with the depth piece, because he can play right back, right? So it did end up benefiting him that Greg put him out at right back in a hostile environment against the Mexican national team on the road. He succeeded. He did a fantastic job, I thought, coming in as a substitute. Mm-hmm, Now picture in the World Cup, knowing that you can depend on a player like him to come in and defend, which in some cases they're going to need. They might need that. So I like the head on his shoulders. I think he thinks in the right way. And that's what you want from a player who realizes the positions he's in. I also thought it was interesting how Man City just loans out all these players and then brings them back and says, all right, guys, you're going to train by yourselves though. This is the lone army. My lone army.
What is happening right now?
What are you going to do? Scrimmage the first team, you know, the loans versus the.
That would be crazy. Actually, I wouldn't mind seeing lone FC versus the Man City's first 11, because just the energy of wanting to prove yourself would be probably pretty special. Yeah. That whole process was really fascinating to me. I don't think I've ever heard an answer from a player about what happens with the parent club when you can kind of tell you're not a part of their future in a meaningful way. And that was great insight. I really appreciated that. Anything else, Heath Pierce, that you not, because I, now that I think through what you guys are saying, I'm like, oh yeah, he did say that. I like that part. And I mean, what's cool when you have these guys on, obviously we get to know them a little bit better, but now I feel like I'm pulling for Eric Palmer Brown. And I feel like everybody else in the audience, probably a little bit the same, like, oh, we got some insight from him. We know what makes him tick. And I think, now I really want to see him do well and do well for the U.S., of course.
Nah, he's got to pay for my loyalty. You know what I mean? I take checks, you know, otherwise,
of course you do.
Otherwise he's got to go. He's got to go in that pool of players and prove himself. No, I am pulling for him just because he's had a career that's probably more relatable to me than most of the guys now in terms of his pathway. Obviously I didn't start in MLS, but I started in a small club in Denmark and kind of constantly felt like I was having to prove myself. To prove myself, but also prove myself for Americans in a lot of ways. And so there's a lot of relatability to what he's going through. And then being at a club that's fighting relegation, those types of things. So I'm certainly pulling for him, knowing just how difficult it is to constantly prove yourself in an environment that's unstable.
Yeah, it's. I think all these experiences really lent him to get thicker skin. And I think that's going to be incredibly valuable, especially when we're dealing with adversity in his life, but also on the fields, right? And I think we can lean on him in a way that maybe 3 or 4 years ago when he was still younger, trying to figure it out, who he was, what he was about. And really that coaching change, Charlie, ultimately proved to be the biggest thing. That was another big takeaway too, that coaches make careers. I don't know if I've ever said it that distinctly before, because there's some element of success that you want to take. Like, no, man, I did it myself. But
you know, that's true though. You know, well, that's
true. There is true. Of course, got to get the other like Johnny Bornstein.
I knew you were going to say that.
Heath knows that Johnny Bornstein wouldn't have a career without Bob Bradley, but keep going.
Yeah. Charlie, so it worked, I guess, in another way, because he also got his career killed. So
true.
You know, coaches do have a ton of power in terms of with it, at least within one club, and you're hoping that's not over a 2-3-4 year span where you're locked in and you can't go anywhere. So I think for Eric Palmer Brown, just getting that consistency and feeling like knowing that you don't have to travel the next year, and you don't have to look for another club. It's almost like if you're a Man City player and you're a lone player, you got your backpack and it's like, all right, where am I traveling to this year? And where am I? And you're constantly worrying about what's next. This year, he's
Charlie,
like,
how long was your show deal?
A 5-year deal.
Whoa, man. Wow. Jimmy, what was your longest? I mean, MLS is harder because you know that there's trades and you know that like there's option deals and whatever. But
I personally didn't ever wanted to have more than a 1-year deal. I liked kind of living on the edge a bit, and maybe that wasn't smart. Because of
bet on yourself, though. You're betting on yourself.
I bet on myself.
Living on the edge.
Give me 6 months. Let's talk about it this summer. You know what I mean?
Roger Pedactor. You're Roger Pedactor.
I am. From East Ventura. For everybody that doesn't know, that's Charlie's nickname for me, and has been for many, many years. All right, let's pivot now to Malik Tillman, who plays for Bayern Munich. He got 4 appearances, 1 start for Bayern this season. Julian Nagelsmann, the manager of Bayern, praised him this past December, saying he's a top quality young striker. He was supposed to go in with the U21 German national team to their Euros, U21 Euros. He declined that, and now he's making a one-time switch to play for the U.S. Apparently, he's going to get called into these games in June, and even though he can play in midfield, he can play out wide as a winger. I think we're really looking at him as the number 9. So I'm going to throw it back to our number 9 here, resident number 9, Charlie Davies. How big is this for the U.S., Charlie? Because anytime I feel like a well-regarded player is committing to your national team, it's pretty significant. And I feel like because of his experience, because of the club that he plays at, and with Robert Lewandowski maybe on the move outside of Bayern, it could mean more minutes, even though it looks like he probably will go on loan potentially next season. This is a pretty big deal to if anything, not only bring in another player of quality, but it's also going to put all the other number 9s on notice. You guys better get your shit together because we got some other talent that we can lean on.
It's great that they were able to get a talented player that's with the Germany U21s. This isn't a Germany full national team player. And I will remind everyone that Julian Green was heralded as the next biggest thing across the globe at that point when he was with Bayern Munich as a young player.
And he did score in his first touch in a World Cup.
Great, but what do you do since? You know, it's not the player that everyone was hoping he would become. So that would be my caution with this before saying, hey, this is the player that's going to be the answer and the number 9. He's young. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the future holds. We don't know where how he's going to fit in with this team and if he takes this opportunity. But he's a talented player with a lot of potential. So it's awesome to get another player in there that could potentially be the answer, be the solution.
Okay, now he's actually 19, Heath, and he turns 20 on May 28th, so that's coming up. I just wanted to say, give some a little bit more context. You could ask me this question, but he joined Bayern's academy in 2015, and he has progressed through their youth system, and ended up signing his first professional contract ahead of this last season. I mean, Bayern's not doing that if he sucks. You know what I mean? Like, he's a good player. That didn't happen for Julian Green, by the way. So there's something about Malik Tillman that I think he's got something that is keeping Bayern interested and wanting to support him. And obviously they can see some potential there.
Yeah. Weirdly, you know, when you watch him score goals for Bayern's second team and stuff, you're like, okay, he's got quality and he's I think he had 2 Champions League appearances and 3 Bundesliga appearances this year, only 1 start. You go, okay, well, he's 19 years old. The game is getting younger. You start to worry a little bit of like, what's the hype around this kid? The one validator that I will give, though, because I'm like, I'm not the expert on what his potential is, but the people that have been in and around him are. And the U21 coach, Antonio Di Salvo, said, we promoted him as a young player. Well, he starts with saying, we regret Malik's decision. It surprised us a lot. I think that's a real validator. We promoted him as a young player in the U21s. We placed a lot of trust in him and gave him match practice. In addition, we were in intensive talks regarding his prospects in the senior national team. I mean, it is really easy for you to, what we've talked about with dual nationals before, just be like, oh, obviously best chance is the U.S. national team. But when you have somebody coming out and making a statement about that, the quality of a player, knowing they put in a lot of time and effort, I think that's a validator to me in terms of the potential that Germany actually sees in this 19-year-old kid. And I think that's what I'm hanging my hat on more than anything, because he doesn't really have first team stats to show for it. He doesn't really have anything other than the fact that if Germany's sad to see him go, that's got to mean something, because Germany produces a ton of talent.
Julian Green did get signed by Bayern when in that 2014 season.
He did.
So, I mean, it's one of those things where if you're at Manchester City or you're at Bayern Munich or you're at Barcelona, you can come through the academy, you can make the first team, but ultimately they're always going to be spending money to bring in the biggest stars. And maybe there's already a big star in that position. So it kind of handcuffs you with your playing time, and you got to get loaned out and build yourself up. So I like that he's coming in. And I think this again goes to Greg Berhalter, Ernie Stewart, Brian McBride, getting these dual nationals to convert and give the U.S. men's national team a chance. I mean, the World Cup in 2026 is obviously the shining star that I think is so attractive for so many players to come in and be a part of this group that is so young and promising.
You know what I find interesting is that he's also got a brother, Timothy Tillman, who plays for Goethe Firth, who played in 29 games. Even though they're the bottom of the Bundesliga, he got a lot of experience, maybe more experience than any other American in the Bundesliga this season, most probably because Gio Reyna got hurt. But he's an attacking midfielder. He's only 23. And I wonder if Malik comes, if Timothy's coming as well, because he's only represented the German the German national team, youth German.
Hey, that's what Kaká did when he went to AC Milan, is he brought Degao with him and said, hey, package deal, you're taking my brother with me. And then he signed a five-year contract and went on loan for 5 years. So don't you guys laugh, but that, it does happen.
I wonder. Yeah. I mean, if anything, it's just going to strengthen our player pool and make it even more competitive. So I'm kind of curious if there'll be another domino that falls on the Tillman.
Oh, you guys talk high on him. You know, Julian Green was also at Greuther Fürth this
year. Yeah, season. He was. Didn't play as much as Tim, and I think Tim had some pretty good performances.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, I want to go and just state this, that we have a tendency in this country to overhype our young players. And so
Eric
Palmer
Brown signed at 16, was considered the top defender in the country at 16. Not saying he wasn't.
I mean,
a lot of that is coach and environment and those types of things. But
Juventus came in
for $1 million for him. He was pretty much unknown outside of, I mean, some scouts got in there and said, this Eric Palmer Brown kid can play. Let's get him before he gets too expensive.
But he wasn't playing. This is the thing. He wasn't playing with Sporting Kansas City. He did not play. How can you turn down $1 million offer for a kid you are not playing?
Tell us, Jimmy, why'd you do that?
Me? I wasn't even.
Jimmy said
he came in after I left. Listen, I had heard about Eric Palmer Brown during my time, that there's a special kid in the academy system that you got to keep an eye on. But by the time he came of age, I was already done playing and shipped out to Chivas USA, rest in peace. But what I think is interesting is, why wouldn't you play this kid? You know, I Peter Vermes was the coach, still the coach now. I don't understand. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of backstory. I'd love to get Peter's perspective at some point. Maybe he wasn't ready. Maybe they didn't want to showcase him, but you had $1 million from Juventus. It isn't just some unknown club. Juventus is coming in and trying to handpick one of your best players in your academy, and then you don't actually give him a chance to play. And then they let him go for free to Manchester City. Yeah. And it kind of bumps me out. I mean, I get that the appeal to go to Man City, it was probably big. I bet you the money there was pretty strong. You don't want to turn that down, especially when you're free. I just feel for Eric a little bit, because you want to play for the club that wanted you initially. And I feel like maybe Juve would have given him a different type of chance. We didn't really get into the Porto thing, but he went on loan to Porto for like 9 months, you know, and Porto's a good club. That
he's got Porto B for most of that.
That's true. But it's still a club that's they know who they are. They're a stepping stone to the bigger teams in Europe. And obviously I could have talked to him for another 30 minutes, but I didn't want to monopolize his time.
By the way, Jimmy,
go ahead.
I don't want to change the subject on that, but there was one thing that I really actually enjoyed that Eric had said. And that was about the fact of like this journey that he's on of like life, like enjoying traveling, learning. I don't think I can speak multiple languages now, but I don't think I stopped and enjoyed it the way that he seemingly is in terms of understanding this moment in time. The three of us have probably been to 100 plus countries combined, maybe obviously overlap in those. But I don't ever remember stopping to enjoy and really embrace like, wow, I'm here. I'm enjoying it. Everything was like just laser focused on a moment and a time. And then you're in, you're out. And I don't know. I think there's, and maybe that's what he needs to be able to do to be at his best on the field. But I thought that was something that just came to mind that was pretty cool.
It speaks to his maturity though, right, Charlie? I mean, it speaks to his maturity.
100%. I think in the beginning part of my career, same as Heath, just laser focused, didn't really travel, didn't really care. You're so focused on the season, playing. And then after my accident and you come back, I go back to Europe. And then it was, I'm taking every opportunity to go and enjoy Europe for what it is, the food, the culture, the language. And I felt like I sucked everything I could out of every moment. And when I came back stateside, I'm like, I did as much as I could, and I'm happy with that. So I would say for most players playing in Europe, take the time to take some trips and travel to really, like, if you're in Europe, like, enjoy it and make the most of it and take in all those experiences, because you can't get them back.
Yeah, there's a lot of comments in the chat right now it's saying, can we get a VAR check on the multiple languages flex by Heath?
Yeah. what do we want, guys? Tell me what you want, and I'll tell you, you know, I'll say it in any language you
Give
want.
Give me the Danish.
A Danish I don't have. I'll give you German, Spanish, and Portuguese. But I will give you some I'll give you some Danish if you want Danish. You gotta send me what to say.
Ich Lieberdik is I think I love you. All right. So for everybody that loves the show as much as us three do, we have a big one coming up tomorrow. We're going to talk about the new collective bargaining agreement that was agreed upon with U.S. Soccer and U.S. Women's National Team, U.S. Men's National Team. We have a couple special guests coming on. Former U.S. Women's National Team player Lori Lindsay, who also does U.S. Women's National Team Hour with Lisa Roman and Sandra Herrera for the attacking third. She also does a lot of CBS stuff and Paramount Plus stuff around the NWSL. And we're going to have Professor Stephen Bank come on. He's a UCLA law professor. He follows this stuff very intimately. He's going to have some great insight for us. So come back and join us for that tomorrow. That's 10 a.m. Pacific. 1 p.m. Eastern if you want to catch it live. If you don't want to catch it live, you can catch it on any podcast platform of your choice. All right, boys, we are done for today's podcast. Charlie, I'm coming to you first, though. Any final thoughts from today's show or looking ahead? I mean, obviously, the roster drop's coming up soon, too. Charlie's... Heath, go ahead. Final thoughts.
I just think that when you said law, I think about Conrad Davies and Pierce as a pretty good law firm.
It is.
We can have a good 1-800 number.
We should do it, like Better Call Saul type stuff.
Have you been injured on the job?
Have you gone out on loan 5 times? Oh, Conrad Davies and Pierce.
You may be entitled to additional compensation.
Yes. Have you been flexed on by a friend that speaks multiple languages? Call Conrad Davies and Pierce. Have you had a jersey swap that didn't go your way? Call Conrad Davies and Pierce.
Do you need to translate Danish? Call
Conrad Davies and Google. Pierce. All right, Heath, I'll come to you. Final thoughts.
No, I'm having a good time with this show.
He's all tapped out. Chuck, how about you?
I'm tapped out. No, I would say just Eric Palmer Brown is a stud. I think we haven't even come close to seeing the best of what he can offer this U.S. Men's National Team. And another year of consistent playing in playing time in Liga is only going to vault him up, whether it's the next – that'll probably set him up for the next move. And maybe it's staying in France and just moving to a bigger club, or, you know, going to a top club in a lower league where he's going to be playing, you know, European football. So for me, I think he's just a good kid, one that you want to root for. And I think he's well on his way.
And I'm excited to see how he performs in these couple games in June and in the Nations League. It's going to be a big month, not only for Eric Palmer Brown, but for a lot of our players moving forward. All right, everybody, that is the end of our show. So on behalf of Eric Palmer Brown, our special guest, our tremendous community, we love you guys. Producer Dez, Charlie Davies, Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Conrad saying thank you for listening and watching in Soccer We Trust. We'll see you tomorrow for a big collective bargaining agreement podcast and any other news around U.S. soccer. See you then. Later.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.